So we're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, Chapter 6, entitled The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and its text 169. So translation, Srila Vyasadeva presented the Vedanta philosophy for the deliverance of conditioned souls. But if one hears the commentary of Sankaracharya, everything is spoiled. Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Factually, the devotional service of the Lord is described in Vedanta Sutra. But the Mayavadi philosophers, the Shankarites, prepared a commentary known as Shariraka Bhashya, in which the transcendental form of the Lord is denied. The Mayavadi philosophers think that the living entity is identical with the Supreme Soul of Brahman. Their commentaries on Vedanta Sutra are completely opposed to the principle of devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore warns us to avoid these commentaries. If one indulges in hearing the Shankarite Sharirakya Bhashya, he will certainly be bereft of all real knowledge. The ambitious Mayavadi philosophers desire to merge into the existence of the Lord, and this may be accepted as Sayuja Mukti. However, this form of mukti means denying one's individual existence. In other words, it is a kind of spiritual suicide. This is absolutely opposed to the philosophy of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga offers immortality to the individual conditioned soul. If one follows the Mayavadi philosophy, he misses the opportunity to become immortal after giving up the material body. The immortality of the individual person is the highest perfectional stage a living entity can attain. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi Bhaktivinoda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So good morning and welcome to everybody from sunny Scotland. So I just made a few notes. It's interesting, Lord Chaitanya's warning that we shouldn't hear the Mayavadi philosophy. If we hear it, then everything is spoiled. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you make a little advancement on this path, then this advancement can't be lost, and you can carry on in your next life and continue on from there. But at the same time, Lord Chaitanya is saying, if you hear Mayavadi philosophy, everything will be spoiled. So that really highlights how dangerous hearing Mayavadis is. So then the question could come up, Allah, how do we go out and preach Krishna consciousness? That ISKCON is a preaching movement. Srila Prabhupada emphasized so much distribution of his books. So we're not supposed to hear Mayavadis. So what do? We go out and we put cotton wool in our ears. Everybody is affected to one degree or another by Mayavadi philosophy. So how do we go out and mix with people and not hear the Mayavadi? So what it's really meaning, as far as I can see, is that we have to practice sadhana very strongly. We have to immunize, inoculate ourselves, insulate ourselves from the influence of Mayavadi, which is there not just in healing, but also in how images that are being conveyed to us, the advertising, the sound vibration, the very energy with which the cities are pulsating. It's all based upon this denial of the existence of God, one form of Mayavadi or another. So we need good sadhana. We need to practice good sadhana or everything can be spoiled. And interestingly, if you break the word down, sadhana, sam means to bestow and dana means wealth. So sadhana means to bestow upon yourself the greatest wealth. And the greatest wealth is this knowledge, this transcendental knowledge. We require knowledge. And we require knowledge, but we also require the ability to explain the knowledge. If you just regurgitate information you've received, that's not actually real knowledge. Krishna explains actually in Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, text 8 through to 12, that the qualities a person has, like humility and pridelessness, these are the real symptoms of somebody that has knowledge. And somebody may be very proud and arrogant, and he may have a lot of information, but he doesn't have real knowledge according to the understanding of Bhagavad Gita. So we need to be able to present the philosophy, and according to how well we can assimilate the information and present it, determines whether we're a Kanishtha, a Majjhima, or an Uttama Adhikari. So if you can present the philosophy in such a way that you're never defeated, you can defeat anybody, then you're Uttama Adhikari. At least that's one understanding of Uttama Adhikari. But at least the Majjhima has strong faith, and he's going out, he's trying to share Krishna consciousness with others. So by going out and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books or Harinam or sharing Krishna consciousness in one way or another, then we're pushed up onto the Majjhima platform, and we can have that vision to be able to see who the devotee is, who the non-devotee is, who the envious is, and also to be able to see Krishna, maybe not Krishna's face, but at least see Krishna's hand, how things are going on, and Krishna's arranging things to happen. So this is how you could grade yourself if you're wondering, am I a Kanishtha, am I a Majjhima, am I an Uttama? So, interestingly enough, further with book distribution, the very first person that we need to distribute a book to is actually ourselves. Before we give anybody else one of Srila Prabhupada's books, we have to give a book to ourselves, and we have to read the book, understand the book, and implement the book. Just knowing the information is not enough in Krishna consciousness. You can know so many things in Krishna consciousness, but how many things are you implementing? You know that you should be humble. You know that you should be tolerant. And then when it comes to the situation, are you actually behaving in that way? So that's important, that we implement the philosophy and we practice the philosophy. Then it becomes realized knowledge. Gyan becomes vigyan. So we have to read the books, and we have to understand the books. And then the books have all the ammunition. They have all the... Srila Prabhupada is countering all the arguments that we could come up against, so that we have all the answers. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada is giving us an answer, and we may not realize what the question is until we go out and we start preaching Krishna consciousness. And then we realize why Srila Prabhupada is stressed, a particular answer that he's giving us, and then we see how that is useful in addressing somebody's doubt or somebody's argument. So it's important that we do learn how to take on challenges to Krishna conscious philosophy, and in that way we can become strong. If we just remain like bookworms and we learn everything but we don't actually get a chance to try it out and explain it to other people, then the knowledge remains shallow and superficial. So we have the books for ammunition, and we have to expose ourselves to the books, to our Guru Maharaj's instructions, to the Association of Senior Devotees, and we have to absorb that so that we can share that with others. As Vaisheshika Prabhu says, we overflow, we fill ourselves up with Krishna consciousness, and then we distribute the overflow to others. So Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that the Maya bodies deny the form of the Lord. So it's counterintuitive, the logic of the Maya bodies. They say, well, because we have form, therefore our source can't have form. Because we have senses, therefore the source can't have senses. Because we have arms and legs, therefore the source can't have arms and legs, which is kind of, generally if you're thinking of the source of something, if you have something, then that means the source must have the same thing. It's a bit like, you get separated from your father when you're a child, and then you get introduced to your father later on, and it turns out that your father is just a blob. He doesn't have arms, he doesn't have legs, he doesn't have any senses, he's just this blob, and that's your father. We'd be very surprised if that was your father, I've been produced from you. It would seem that the source is inferior to that which is emanating from it, if it doesn't have any of these things. But we understand that because we have senses, because we have particular inclinations, that therefore our origin must also have these. So that's an illogical conclusion to come to, that the source has nothing, has no arms, no legs. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada goes on to say, bereft of all real knowledge, that we will become bereft if we hear this Mayavadi philosophy, we take it seriously, and we don't have the inoculation of our sadhana, strong sadhana, to deflect. The sadhana acts as a shield, actually. We have the shield of practicing our Krishna consciousness in the morning. We get up and we chant, we bathe, and then we bathe our consciousness with all the names. Then we hear the philosophy, so that we have a strong shield, so that when we go out, we can deflect, so that when they say the Mayavadi things, we don't hear, it doesn't go in, it doesn't, we have a filter that doesn't allow those things to go in and to be taken seriously. Like water off a duck's back. We go out to give association, but not to take association. So, bereft, it's interesting the word bereft. The dictionary meaning is that somebody becomes sad and lonely after the death of somebody. So it's amazing how apt, you know, Srila Prabhupada is very careful how he uses his words. He's saying bereft of real knowledge, because bereft implies a loss of a relationship, that you lose your relationship. So the real knowledge is that we have sambandha gyan, and we understand that we have a relationship with Krishna. So knowledge, the real knowledge is understanding we have a relationship with Krishna. So the other significance of knowledge is, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, there's four types of pious men that come to him in chapter 7. And he explains that the one who comes to him in knowledge is the one who's the most dear to him. So what that implies is, because quite a lot of us come to Krishna consciousness because we're in a distressed condition, and then we feel some relief when we take up Krishna consciousness. But what Krishna is saying is, I want you now to come to knowledge. I want you to understand. I want you to have knowledge, and then you can become more dear to me. So just, if you come to Krishna because you're in distress, that's fine. That's the beginning. But then now you have to try to develop knowledge of your relationship with Krishna. And then you become very dear to Krishna by acquiring that knowledge. So that's the significance of having knowledge. Okay, so I've got a question. Come back to that in a minute. So that's the significance of having knowledge. And if you just have knowledge of the impersonal aspect of Krishna, then okay, that's nice. The question is coming up asking about Brahmavadis, isn't their position also eternal? So I just heard recently in Prabhupada Memories, and one Mataji was asking Srila Prabhupada, when the Brahmavadis go to the impersonal Brahman, why do they fall back down again? Isn't it eternal? When you go there, you know, Brahman is sat and chit, it's eternal knowledge, so why don't you just stay there for eternity? So Srila Prabhupada fought for a minute. He was wondering how he could explain it in such a way that you could relate to it. And he said, because they get lonely. Because they become lonely. So you could say it was knowledge in one sense, sat chit, it's eternal, it's knowledge, you're aware that you're the soul, you're aware that you're not the body, you're aware that you're not material energy, you've come to that point, you're free of your false ego, and that's really, really good. But you don't have complete knowledge, you don't have knowledge of your relationship with Krishna. And because you don't have that knowledge of your relationship with Krishna, because it's impersonal, then you become lonely. Eventually you become lonely, and then you fall back down again into the material world, and then again, well, think starts off again. So important that when we come to Krishna, that's not you've taken shelter of Krishna, that's very nice. You come to me because you're in distress. You realize material life is suffering, and that's really nice. But now the onus is on you to come to the level of acquiring knowledge, of becoming aware of your relationship with Krishna, ultimately of becoming aware of your swarup with Krishna, when your eternal relationship is with Krishna. Now you have to try and realize that. And there's a countdown. You only have so much time before this life is finished to try and achieve that so that you can go back to Krishna. So we have to make use of every moment and be engaged with urgency to practice our Krishna consciousness, and not just casual Krishna consciousness. I remember Dhanavir Maharaj, he came to Scotland, and he made a really nice statement that I was stuck with. He said, Krishna consciousness solves all problems. But he said, not sloppy Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness, you can't do it in a casual, sloppy way. It has to be with urgency, with attention, with focus, and then everything is solved. But if you don't practice it with that knowledge, with that deep understanding, then you won't achieve the actual goal. So it's important to apply ourselves in Krishna consciousness, and not that we get into this kind of zone where we're comfortable. We've come in distress. Now we're free of distress. Everything's fine, and I'm just going to cruise along here. I get my prasadam, everything's good, everything's laid on, and life is easy, things are good, I don't have any sinful reaction anymore. So this is what the heavenly planet says. They know that Krishna is God, they have their material desires, they don't get sinful reaction, and so they just enjoy themselves, and they don't get any bad karma, but they don't develop. So as soon as their karma runs out, down they come again. So we have to be careful when we come to Krishna consciousness that we can shift into this stage of having our real knowledge and understanding our relationship with Krishna very deeply. So Prabhupada goes on to say another interesting turn of phrase. He refers to the Mayavadis as being ambitious philosophers. So I thought that was quite funny, because it reminded me of somebody turning up for a job and the boss says, okay, we've been looking at all your qualifications, and we've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I think we found the perfect job that would just suit you because of the things that you're good at. This will be the job for you. And then the employee says, no, I'm not interested. I want to be the boss. So it's been quite ambitious. So that actually leads to spiritual suicide, which is very heavy to say spiritual suicide. It's like, I once said, Kriyananda Goswami say, it's like having an arm that aches, and you've got this aching arm, and you decide, well, I've got a really good solution to get rid of the ache. I just amputate the arm. So his friend sees him later on. Oh, how's your aching arm? He goes, it's great. It's not aching anymore. Oh, why is that? Well, I just cut it off, and now it doesn't ache anymore. So spiritual suicide, okay, you're experiencing some difficulty with your existence. You're in the material world. And Srila Prabhupada refers to the conception of void is due to the frustration of life. So because we're frustrated with life, we decide, okay, so there's nothing. I don't believe in anything. There's nothing. It's all void. So that doesn't really solve the problem. You just cut off your existence now. You commit spiritual suicide. So now you don't have any personality. You don't have any relationship. You just float around in the Brahman. But if you do that, it's not really the solution, because sooner or later, you'll get lonely, and then you'll come back here. So killer of the soul is also referred to in the Ishupanishad as Atmahat, to kill the soul, to kill your natural inclination to have personal interaction. You kill that. So that's such a shame, such a disservice that Krishna has given us, and then we decide we want to kill it, we want to destroy it, Atmahat. It's ungrateful, really. They say the best way to get rid of attitude is to turn it into gratitude. So, I mean, we talk about Krishna consciousness. We say Krishna consciousness. I have to be Krishna conscious. Everywhere Srila Prabhupada saying Krishna consciousness. But it's not just that we're conscious of Krishna. It's that we're appreciating Krishna. That everything we're doing is in a mood of gratitude. That we're grateful that Krishna's given us our existence, that he's given us our personality, that he's given us our senses, our arms and our legs and everything we have. We're grateful that every moment we're grateful for everything that we've been given. So this is actual. I mean, Kamsa was conscious of Krishna, but he wasn't feeling very grateful to Krishna. He saw Krishna as a threat to his plans and what he wanted to do. So we have to see Krishna as Sudadam Sarvabhutanam. He's our friend. He's not a threat to our existence and to our plans. They say if you want to make Krishna laugh, just tell him your plans. So it's better not to tell Krishna your plans. It's better to ask Krishna, what are your plans? What is it that you want me to do? And can you give me the intelligence to recognize the opportunities that you're giving me? So we become pliable in Krishna's hands. We allow him to use us as he sees fit and compliant with his will. So we have to be careful we don't try to initiate something ourselves, which is contrary to what Krishna's plan is. So by being very submissive and very humble and very tolerant, we'll find ourselves in the right situation. And we ask Krishna, please give me the intelligence to see that this is the situation that you've arranged for me. You've put me with this particular set of devotees and in this particular situation. There's an interesting book that devotees sometimes read, but it's not one of Srila Prabhupada's books. It's called Easy Journey to Other Temples. And in this book, it says that if there's any problems with anybody, it's not your fault. And you just have to go to a different temple. Problem is, when you go to the next temple, you run up against the same problems you experienced in the previous temple. And so you go on an easy journey around so many different temples. So sooner or later, you will have to realize that the situation you're in is Krishna's mercy. And I'm with this particular group of devotees, with this particular circumstance and situation and lack of facility or whatever it happens to be. And this is what I'm here. This is what I've been put by Krishna. So how do I make the best use of this bad bargain and be Krishna conscious? So we have a question here from Harika. He's asking, I have a question on Uttam Adhikari. If real knowledge is we realize our relationship with Krishna and he is the most dear to him. In other words, the person who realizes has knowledge of Krishna is the most dear to him. Can we all become Uttam Adhikaris, including Shudras and women? As in Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami states that there are three symptoms of Uttam Adhikari is when a person realizes himself to be an eternal servant of Krishna. He loses interest in everything apart from Krishna. Always thinks of Krishna and devises means to spread Krishna. How can we fallen people dedicate ourselves completely like this and become Uttam Adhikaris? Because everyone cannot be a Goswami, Sannyasi or Brahmachari. How can we do it without being casually or sloppy Krishna conscious? Because I am sloppy. Thank you, Harika. That's very honest, very humble of you. So I was listening to Burijan. I was sharing some memories he had of Srila Prabhupada. And one of the things he remembers that Prabhupada said that has helped him a lot is Prabhupada said, something is better than nothing. So sometimes we can be a little extreme in Krishna consciousness. We try to get everything all in one go. And because we can't, then we decide, okay, well, the only other option is nothing. But there is another option, actually. You can have nothing. You can have everything, or you can have something. So they say, don't let the things that you can't do stop you doing the things that you can do. And if you keep doing the things that you can do, eventually you'll be able to do the things that you can't do. And I had a nice explanation of that actually is always really stuck in my mind. By the way, he called Sakiras, the book was given class once. He's from Wales and a very nice devotee. And he was saying, he said, Krishna consciousness is like going around on a racing track. And you have these little fences that you have to jump over. You're on your horse and you're jumping over. And the first hedge you have to jump over is up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And so you get over that hedge. It's not so high. And once you've done it a few times, so that's okay. And then the next hedge comes along 16 rounds. Okay, and you get over that hedge. And then the next one is 4 hedges, the four principles, and you get over those. And everything's going fine, and you're going along and doing a bit of service. And then suddenly, in the distance, you see a huge mountain range, a massive range of mountains. They're huge. It's impossible. You practically fall off the horse with fright. How am I ever going to be able to jump over that mountain on this horse? It's not possible. And you think, maybe I should just jump off the horse and give up and go back and call it a day. But then you think, no, well, I'll keep going over this hedge, 4 o'clock, this one, 16 rounds, this one, do this, do some. And you keep jumping over those hedges. And as you get closer and closer, it's becoming more and more fearful. But as you get closer to the mountain, you notice the mountain's texture is canvas. And then you realize it's not a mountain at all. It's been painted on a canvas, and you go clean through it. And there's the hedge up at 4 in the morning, 16 rounds, follow the principles. And then another mountain comes up, but this time you realize, okay, so this one, if I can just keep doing these things, I'll get right through this mountain, no problem. And sure enough, the next mountain comes along, and you go clean through it again. So you continue on with what you can do, and the things that seem insurmountable, as you get closer, you realize that you'll be able to deal with them in one way or another. You'll be able to overcome them. So we just work from where we are right now, and we don't give up. Two frogs fell in a pot of milk, and they couldn't climb out the pot, and they realized the person coming back in the morning wouldn't be there till 8 o'clock. It was 12 o'clock at night, and one of the frogs says, I'm giving up now. There's no point trying to tread water, tread milk. I'm just going to drown. So blah, blah, blah. He drowned. And the other frog said, well, I'm just going to carry on as long as I can. I'll probably last an hour anyway, and then I'll drown, but at least I gave it everything I've got. So he's kicking away in the milk, trying to keep his head above. And suddenly a big yellow blob comes up underneath him, and it's a piece of butter, because he's churned the milk now, and the butter's rising to the top. So he climbs on the lump of butter, and he jumps out the pot and gets away. So just carry on doing the best that you can do, and wait for that lump of butter, wait for that inconceivable transformation to take place, so that you can do something which at the present moment would seem impossible and inconceivable. So in Krishna consciousness, there's three sets of statements in Srila Prabhupada's books, if you want to analyze it in this way, which I think is quite an interesting way of looking at it. You have one category of Srila Prabhupada's statements which make Krishna consciousness seem almost impossible, seem very difficult. Standard is so high. I was just listening to Srila Prabhupada this morning, and he was saying, even if you have a tinge of material desire, you have to be completely, so they can seem so. And then you have another set of statements in Srila Prabhupada's books where it's kind of, it seems like, you know, okay, well, I think I can do this, although it is going to be tough, but it's doable. And that's one category of statements also that are there. And then there's another category of statements which make everything seem so easy, that you just have to chant Hare Krishna once, one pure holy name. You just have to do a little service. Srila Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction that once this process of Krishna consciousness is so powerful and so pure, that once you start it, you will be forcibly dragged to success. So then you have the other extreme that, well, I don't have to worry then, everything's fine, you know, I can just take it easy, everything's great, I've started it, so let Krishna just drag me back home, back to Godhead. So you have all these different statements. So when somebody takes one of Srila Prabhupada's statements, they have to be taken in the context of all the statements, all the lectures, all the books of Prabhupada and his disciples and senior devotees, the whole spectrum of transcendental knowledge that's there, that our whole context has to be taken into account. So we have to be aware of that when somebody that's maybe not so familiar with Krishna consciousness comes along and pulls one statement out, we have to be well grounded in the philosophy that we can say, well, yeah, that's in this context, but in a bigger context, we have to look at it like this, you see. And the biggest context is that Krishna consciousness is very easy. Krishna consciousness is difficult, but it's possible if you try hard. And the Krishna consciousness is so elevated and so high that we should never take it for granted, and we should never become complacent, and we should always be very, very humble and understand that even the great acharyas in our line were also feeling that they were incapable of achieving pure devotional service. And that's because it's so elevated and it's so wonderful, and Krishna is so perfect and so pure. So you have to have the full context of all these statements. And then we can understand how we can navigate from where we are right now, wherever we are right now, and how we can go forward in our Krishna consciousness. There's a nice book actually by Dhanavir Maharaj. It's called The Bright Side. And he says in that book that nobody of any value achieved anything of any significance by ever being discouraged. So it's never justifiable philosophically, emotionally, in any way at all for you to become discouraged in practicing Krishna consciousness. It's always, and that's the challenge, is can you assimilate the information in such a way that you can become encouraged and you can go and encourage other people that, no, this is possible. We can do this. We can achieve it. We can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. We can become pure and perfect. We can do it because that's what we are. We've been conditioned in a different way, but that's not what we are. We are all pure. We are all underneath it. We're all free of these contaminations. And self-realization means becoming aware of that, becoming aware of what you really are and what your real potential is. So, yeah, it's a nice book, The Bright Side by Dhanavir Maharaj. So many nice statements in there encouraging us how to take things and be positive. The general nature of the mind is negative. They say the first word the child learns to say is no. And basically, what is a child? A child is a mind on legs. It's basically just whatever comes into the child's mind, that's what it does. It just says and speaks. It doesn't have any intelligence right now to discriminate whether this is proper to do or anything like this. So as the child develops its intelligence and develops real knowledge, educado in Spanish is referring to how well-behaved a person is. So as you become, as your character develops and you develop better character, as Bhagavad Gita explains, then the humility, the pridelessness, the perception of the evil of birth and death, detachment from worldly things, these are all real symptoms of knowledge that we acquire as we progress and as we develop in our knowledge. And so the challenge is how can we become more and more strong in our intelligence, because intelligence is very much linked with determination. If you want to be a very determined and a very enthusiastic person, then you have to have strong intelligence to be able to push through the mind's negativity that's there. So that's the challenge, to be able to do that and to implement the information. And it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time, but and we have to try the best that we can in the position that we're in just now, and at the same time accept that these things are there. We have our frailties, our foibles, but we don't allow that to slow us down. One devotee, he said that one time he was feeling quite sad because he was quite a proud devotee. He was trying to be humble, very unsuccessfully, and he went to Satsarup Maharaj and he says, you know, you're very humble. And I can't seem to be like that. I'm really, really proud. And I'm getting a bit discouraged. And Satsarup Maharaj said to him, he said, well, I've always been like this. Before I became a devotee, I was very humble anyway. He said, and so you've always been like that. So you just have to use whatever you've got in Krishna's service. So that's the challenge. It's okay. I'm like this. I have this nature. I have this particular type of body. How do I use this? How do I engage in Krishna's service? Because of your physiognomy, you look a certain way to other people. So according to how you look to somebody, that's why Sankirtan is very good, actually, because you get to see what you look like by how people react to you. They become the mirror. So you can't blame other people. You can't blame them for how they're reacting. You have to blame yourself because they're reacting to you. So they're the mirror of how you are. I remember one time I was on Sankirtan, and this devotee came over to me and he said, Prabhu, he says, how you doing? I said, well, it's really nice. I've been meeting some really good people, getting some great donations, you know. And he goes, well, I tell you, on my side of the street over there, it's terrible. I'm getting all the crazy people. And would you mind if I went on this side and you can go and do that side? And I said, okay, then so I went over onto the other side of the street. He was doing my side. Half an hour later, he comes back over. He goes, Prabhu, you know, I said, yeah. He said, how are you doing? I said, it's been quite nice. I just met somebody who was really good. He took some books. And he was interested. He was asking a lot of nice questions. And he says, Prabhu, they've all gone over onto the other side of the road now. I'm meeting all the idiots on this side of the road. So we can't blame the people for the way they're reacting to it. It's because of how we're approaching them. It reflects the way we're approaching them. So we have to see, okay, so I have this particular physiognomy. I have this particular way that I look. This is how my voice sounds. How do I use that in such a way in Krishna's service that it can attract people to take books and take an interest in Krishna consciousness? Krishna's given me this particular, these particular abilities, in this particular way that I am. So how can I use that to engage others? So, yeah, for me, because my main service has been doing Sankirtan, it's been interesting over the pandemic that I haven't been able to go out and distribute books so much. So I've been staying back in the temple, and I've been seeing, actually, we get a lot of mercy and a lot of shelter by going out and doing Sankirtan. And even if we just go once a week, or we just do an hour here and there from time to time, just to try it, it's very, very good, because it helps us to appreciate more what we do have. And there's a tendency sometimes when we're back at the temple, we can get caught up in very minor details of the way things are. You know, somebody didn't serve me prasadam nicely. This one doesn't like me. I don't like him. And you can get into all the itsy bitsy little goings on. But when we go out and we see how bad it is out there and how little knowledge people have, when we come back to the temple, it helps us to appreciate the devotees, how special the devotees are, and how privileged we are to be given the chance to practice some level of Krishna consciousness and do some type of devotional service. So it's very, very good for that. It helps to nourish an appreciation for things that can be taken for granted. And we can become a little ease-loving, a little kind of in our comfort zone. So it's good. It's good to go out and interact with people. Sometimes we may be thinking, I'm not making a lot of progress. I don't know very much. And it helps when you go out to see actually that's not the case. However little you know, it's a lot more than what most people know. They don't know very much at all, actually. Very, very, so it helps to go. They say that if you're in space and there was no lights anywhere, you could get to a part of space where you were so far away from any planets that it was completely dark. They say that if you light a candle, you would be able to see the candle 12 miles away. That's what they say. So, you know, 12 miles away, a candle doesn't seem very significant. And in Kali Yuga, because everything is so dark, even that little knowledge is illuminating and can help so much. So going out and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and presenting Krishna consciousness to others, preaching Krishna consciousness, helps us to see, actually, appreciate that we do have even just a tiny candle of knowledge is still something, still useful. Something is better than nothing. And Rupa Goswami is explaining we have enthusiasm, and we have confidence, and then we have to have patience. So sometimes the difficult part is you can be enthusiastic and you can be really confident, but then you're going to have to wait for the result. Sometimes you're chanting and you're thinking, I just heard the whole mantra. That's amazing for me. And I'm just heard another mantra, and wow, and I've heard three mantras in a row. Where's the bliss? What's my swaroop? Am I liberated now? So then we have to be patient. You have to apply yourself to the process very enthusiastically and with strong faith, strong confidence. And then you have to be patient. Then you have to wait, because you've been messing around in the material world for millions of lifetimes, and then you want to snap your fingers and just get Krishna like that. Well, Krishna may want to wait now and just say, okay, he seems serious, but I want to see how determined he is. And so then you have to be patient. It's interesting, there's a book about the holy name by Satyananda Maharaj, and he's saying when you get to the heart, you go through these different barriers, and they have doors on them. And the first barrier is just physically controlling yourself, and then you go to the next door, and that one is you mentally controlling yourself. And then you come to the next door, and that's the door of the heart. And that one doesn't open on the outside. That one opens on the inside. So the other two doors, it's up to you whether you can control yourself and whether you can focus. That's entirely up to you. You have to do that yourself. But then when you come to the door of the heart and you want to see Krishna and see what your relationship with is with Krishna, then you're banging on the door, but you have to wait and see when Krishna's going to open the door. And so you have to be patient. Tap on the door. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You're tapping on the door. Please, Krishna, I know you're there. Could you open the door and let me see you? And Krishna's just going to see how patient you are, how determined you are. Sooner or later, the door will open, and then you'll see. And you'll get darshan of Krishna. Then when you see Krishna, you see yourself. You see who you are, what your relationship is, what your service is, everything. Everything becomes revealed to you. So a few statements there that struck me. Bereft of all real knowledge. I thought that was very interesting. The Prabhupada used that word. Spiritual suicide. And the ambitious Mayavadi philosopher. So don't be cheeky with Krishna. Don't be ambitious. That's what got us here in the material world in the first place. Srila Prabhupada actually compared it to a child goes to the mother, and he keeps saying to the mother, please give me the moon, please give me the moon, please give me the moon. And so the mother's trying to say to the child, well, it's not actually possible. I mean, for one thing, it's too big. You know, if you try to grab it, it'll crush you. And how am I supposed to bring the moon down to you? No, I want the moon, I want the moon. So eventually, to pacify the child, the mother gives the child a mirror. She says, look, there's the moon. And the child looks in the mirror and he goes, wow, the mirror, the moon. And then the child becomes really happy. So living entity saying, I want to be God, I want to be God. And Krishna's saying, well, okay, you know, I'm Swarat, I'm fully independent, and I'm Ambigyar. I'm fully cognizant of everything that's around, everything in the entire creation. But it's not possible for you, the minute spirit soul, to be like that. No, I want to be. So then Krishna says, okay, then come to the material world and you can have a reflection of what it is like to be God. And that's where we are. That's what we're first birth in the material world is Lord Brahma. And we have a whole universe to control and to play at being God. Krishna puts us in that position and gives us that service to do. That's our first, when we drop from the spiritual world, our first position, Lord Brahma. Okay, you want to be God? There's a universe, 14 planetary systems. You look after everybody. you make sure they get all their desires fulfilled, they get the right bodies according to what they want, they go to the right place after they perform certain activities, either up, down, or on the same level. You can take care of all that then. And so that's what we're trying to do. So it's actually impossible for us to be God, and we have to recognize that ambition to challenge God, that's actually there in the heart. That has to be rooted out, and we have to become humble. There's two extremes. One is you're the center of the universe, and the other is that you're the humble servant. And Krishna, everything is revolving around Krishna, what Krishna wants. It's interesting, they say in the spiritual world that the living entities, they do love each other, but what they love about each other is how much that particular living entity loves Krishna. So everything is so Krishna-centered that when you see a little peacock or a little parrot flying around in the spiritual world, you love it, you're attracted to it because you see how much love and how much attraction that living entity has for Krishna. Everything is so Krishna-centered. And here we are, the opposite of that is me-centered. I'm the center. Everything revolves around me. What I'm thinking is the most important. How I'm feeling is the most important. My opinion is the most important. But they say opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one. So we're not really interested in opinions, people's opinions. We're interested in Krishna's opinion, and we're interested in how to apply that opinion and how to become compliant to what Krishna's opinion is. So how do you rid yourself of personal weaknesses? This is a question Gurujan Guru answers. The first thing is to recognize them and then decide which ones we can renounce. And we should be humble about the weaknesses we are sincerely unable to give up and proceed in our efforts to become Krishna conscious. So we have to see in Krishna consciousness that we want to be positive. We don't want to be discouraged. There are warnings there. And at times it can seem very, very lofty what we're trying to achieve. But we have to understand also that we have to be humble about our weaknesses and see that we should judge righteousness is not our impeccable practice of Krishna consciousness, but our sincere endeavor to move toward that goal from our present platform of realization. So they say you judge a man by his goals, by what he's aspiring for. That's how you judge a man. You don't judge him by what he is. So Krishna consciousness is very much like that. Krishna warns in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, don't deride a devotee. Apichatsu daracharo. Okay, the devotee may have some difficulty, may have some problem, but we shouldn't deride that devotee because Krishna's in the heart. He knows how sincerely that devotee is trying to be a devotee. And it's between him and Krishna. And for ourselves, we're just trying to apply Krishna consciousness to ourselves and to come to the at a higher level, make progress in Krishna consciousness. So we should be careful about doing that. Because you can be very judgmental. Krishna consciousness has a lot of standards and we have a very refined level of discrimination, so we can really, we could really use that to judge people and analyze them and diagnose them and assess them. But that's not really what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be deepening our appreciation of devotees and seeing the beauty of the devotees. Rupa Goswami warns as well in Ekta Instruction, Drishtai Swabhava Janatir Papasasta Dosha. He explains that how we see a devotee, we should see it like a person sees the Ganges, which is full of bubbles, foam, and mud, but still he bathes in the Ganges. So he disregards the superficial imperfections that may be there in the devotee, and he sees the devotee's service. That's how we see a devotee, and that's how we appreciate devotees as well, by the service that they're doing. And that safeguards us against deriding or finding fault. And they say if you can spot it, it means you've got it. And what that means is, you may see something in somebody that's not right, but it doesn't disturb you. You're not upset about it. You just think, oh, the devotee's he's up late for Mangal Aarti. But he got in late the night before, or whatever. Maybe he didn't sleep so well that night. But if you spot it and you really got upset about it, then you have to look at yourself. Why are you so upset? Is that because you wanted to sleep in? You're very attached to sleep. And when somebody else is getting the sleep that you want, then you become annoyed and you become irritated. So if you find you're spotting things all the time, then look at yourself and think, maybe it's because I've got them as well. And then if you see you've got them, you'll be less inclined to judge other people. Okay, so any questions or comments from anybody? I can't see everybody, so it's nice when you can see who you're talking to. I can only see myself. I'm giving class to myself this morning.
A question from
there. We go. Now I can see everybody. Oh, Hari Bol. I didn't look at that. Hare Krishna Prabhus. Wow. So one question I've got for all of you then. What's the? Is there a deadline for when you're going back out on Sankirtan, or going back out to interact with the public? Is there a date that you? We're not sure. We're maybe going to go mid June, but we're just waiting to see.
The manor is opening on the 21st of June.
Wow!
According to government implementations, so if everything goes accordingly, on 1 month from now, exactly 1 month from now, we'll be opening. Today's the 22nd, so in 1 month, the manor will be open fully to the public, and hopefully also the residents can go out and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books.
Jai. And Harinam. Yeah. Is Harinam still going on now in London from Soho Street?
It is, yes. It is. Wow. And also, if according to my information, they are distributing books as well, the residents of the ashram.
Nice.
Right. For the moment, there is no further questions. Anyway, I'd like to thank for and go be through all the important things that we mentioned, like the strong sadhana that works as a shield to protect us from the Mayavad philosophy, and that sadhana is our transcendental knowledge, and the ability we have to describe that knowledge to others determines our adhikar. That was quite a nice point, and that real knowledge means to know what is our relationship with Krishna. And then there was this question about the Brahmavadi, and you mentioned that in that kind of realization, one is not happy because, as Prabhupada says, they feel lonely.
Yeah.
They feel lonely, and this voidism that creates in our life because we are so we have so much distaste for this world, we try to suicide ourselves by creating this void reality. And then we want them. You gave this very nice perspective of the three statements of Prabhupada. Krishna consciousness, super difficult, super high subjects. At the same time, it's on the middle level. It is doable. It's tough, but we can actually achieve it. And the first one, it's that it is easy, and just by chanting and surrendering once, Krishna will always take care of us. And I very much appreciated the story you tell of Swarup Damodar Maharaj, when a devotee asked, how you're so humble and I'm not, and I don't know what to do. I try, but it doesn't work. And so I was like this before it all. So you engage your capacity. And that was very nice, and it's always a good reminder. And we spoke a bit about the principles that Rupa Goswami states of being enthusiastic, confident, and patient. We need to be patient to engage our nature to attain the results of our sadhana. And even before, you mentioned the example of the mountain, you chant your rounds, you get up 4 in the morning, you go through. So that was quite a point all throughout the class, which was the perseverance aspect of Krishna consciousness to be successful in the result. I feel it was underlying your class was that a perseverance and endurance of sadhana and every day going out and distributing books, and in this way will be successful. Also, you mentioned last point, Aul, is that we should not tell Krishna our plans, but we should ask Krishna what it is that he's planning for us, and pray that he gave us the intelligence so that we can follow that and achieve that. This way we'll be successful. So this was a little recap of what was spoken today.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
My personal question is, how do we engage one's impatient nature in Krishna consciousness?
Well, that's also good, because if you're impatient, it means that that you urgency. Have a sense. Yeah, you have a sense of urgency, mm-hmm. And it's interesting when you're chanting. If you're chanting and you're too slow, and you're hurry, and you're thinking, because sometimes you go through these stages where you think, I just need to hear the holy name, so I'm just going to do it so slowly. And you're Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and then you do it so slow that the mind is quite fast, and unless you run toward Krishna, you can get caught by the mind, actually. So you have to have urgency, and you have to be running. When you're chanting, you're running toward Krishna. And if you don't have that urgency, or that, as you can see, the intensity, because it's not just based upon speed, which is a mechanical thing, but if you intensely want to take shelter of somebody, then it reminds me of, there's a story of these little tortoises. And there's a certain day in the year when they hatch, and all the birds know the day, and they get buried quite up from the sea so that the sea doesn't wash them out. But when they hatch, the challenge is, can they run to the sea before the birds catch them? And what the birds do is they swoop down and they flip the little tortoise onto its back, and then they eat the thing alive, you know, which is really... So the challenge is, when you wake up in Krishna consciousness and you realize you have to take shelter of Krishna, how quickly can you take shelter of the sea? How quickly can you become absorbed in the holy name and become safe? And if you're just kind of moseying along and taking your time, then you're in a danger zone. There's any chance that Maya can just zip in, flip you over on your back, and eat you alive. So we have to be quite impatient because we want to get back to Krishna, but impatient with ourselves, not impatient with Krishna.
I remember a devotee tell me, chant as if you're going to die today and read as if you're going to live forever. Reading is very slow and detailed, but chanting is very urgent and intense. That was something came to my mind. Thank you so much. So I think thank you.